is Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me today. It is April 23rd, 2013. It's the day after Earth Day and the day after my birthday, and I have to admit I'm quite, what's the word, fried maybe today. Earth Day was such a spectacular day yesterday. We premiered the Swingin' Gourmets here in San Jose, California. I'm actually on a little road trip. And this was it's a vegan cabaret musical. It was so much fun. It really went well. And for those of you who joined us, thank you so much. And Earth Day, the whole month around Earth Day is, it's pretty good. People think a little bit more about the environment. I would like people to think about the environment maybe every day. We only live here all of our lives, and we should really be nurturing and taking care of the planet. But okay, so around Earth Day, it's an opportunity for groups to have different events. And I was at the Berkeley Vegan Earth Day event a few days ago and got to speak and met some of you, some of my listeners. That's always very fun. And lots of wonderful things are happening. And I want to bring on my first guest. This is one of these PRN cross-promotional things where we have other guests from PRN on our show, and I've been trying to get this person on my show for a very long time. Welcome to It's All About Food, Betsy Rosenberg from On the Green Front. Betsy, how are you today?
Well, Karen, I want to welcome you to the Bay Area. Happy Earth Day and happy birthday. And when you mentioned
that
we had glorious weather, I was going to say, oh, out here too. We just have this amazing run of blue skies, sunny days, getting warmer progressively. A little bit too warm for my taste today. It's about 82 degrees. I'm in San Rafael, just north of San Francisco today.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
It does seem a bit early in the year to be this hot, but what the heck, it's global weirding.
Yeah, well, it's kind of cliche to talk about the weather, but I'm always talking about the weather, and everyone's always talking about the weather because
well, it's what
changing.
Are we doing about it? That's the question, right?
Exactly, but it is beautiful here, and I sometimes laugh when people in California complain about the weather because you have nothing to complain about either.
You are so right. I just had my cousins were in town from London this past week. They're thinking about moving here in part because they said they did not see the sun for 6 months between October and March. And they were lucky to hit a really great, you know, we literally didn't see a cloud for the whole week they were here, and they were like in shock and sunburned when they
but
left.
But what's spectacular right now is it's spring, and I couldn't help but notice whenever I'm outside, just breathing is a delight. It's so fragrant. There's the Rose Garden in San Jose where we like to run, and you can literally smell the roses. So fabulous. Just everywhere. We were down in Santa Cruz. The air was just spectacular. And, you know, why not?
And if not on your birthday and Earth Day, if you don't smell the roses, then when are you going to, right?
That's right. But, you know, it's not about, you know, what the next best thing is you're going to buy, the next best gadget that's going to really make you happy. For me, just smelling some delicious air, it's intoxicating.
Could not agree with you more, as you might imagine. And we need to, I think that's the theme, get back to the simple pleasures in life, because Lord knows life is getting, you know, more complex daily, rapidly, with technology. I just came off a two-hour training session with a social media consultant I hired so I can let the world know about my radio show and my work. And she showed me Pinterest and Instagram and, of course, Twitter and Facebook. They're pretty obvious. There's something called Quora. There's something that a couple of others that start with a K. I mean, it's just crazy.
Just too much.
Crazy with a
too
K.
Much.
Yeah, I said, so when I learn the basics, by the time I do, they're going to have three more new platforms that I'm going to have to learn. And I just, stop and just take a deep breath of fresh air and get regrounded because, you know, things are just really taken off a little bit too quickly for my taste.
Well, I love the Internet, and I love technology, and I love a lot of the convenience that it's brought us. But the question is it really making us happier? And I don't know if I have that answer. And I have to apologize if you hear any strange noises in the background because I'm actually in a mall right now.
Oh, well, that's appropriate as we're talking about not getting bogged down with stuff.
I mean, one of the advantages about malls, which I'm never in because I don't do a lot of shopping, but this particular one has free internet. I've been sitting here taking advantage of that.
Well, there is that advantage for sure. And just before we go any deeper, I just want to acknowledge, you know, what this, you know, progress towards technology means is something like what we just saw, which was the quick apprehension of the Boston bombers. That's the best use of technology, certainly. But I do think we need to, it seems like we're going to have to, you know, stop and really look at how much is too much, because I don't know, I just worry that people are never going to get outside and play. And I'm talking about children of all ages. If we're constantly in front of our screens, computer, televisions, telephones, and, you know, it's really, it's a good thing if we manage it. If it takes us over, not so good.
Yeah, it's all about balance, and it's so easy to get unbalanced. And
indeed.
As I mentioned before, we just premiered this event last night in San Jose. It was a vegan cabaret musical, and there were about...
That sounds really so California. Fun. I love that.
Well, actually, we plan on doing it in New York, but we wanted to test it out here in the California waters. And what I was just thinking while you were talking about technology is we're not in community as much anymore. With all the social networking, the community is online, but there is nothing like being face-to-face with individuals. Last night was like a love fest for me, seeing so many of my friends and peers and colleagues, and there's nothing like looking in someone's eyes, and I'm not talking about being on Skype and looking at their eyes.
without a screen. I know, it's like I have 1,500 friends on Facebook, but who am I going to have lunch with?
Yeah, exactly, and it's important, so important. Okay, so let's get back to our home, the planet Earth. And I think the planet Earth will ultimately do fine as a planet, at least for another few, however long the sun holds out to keep things spinning.
but we can see the sun with increasing pollution. Yes, it'll be there whether we're here or not. I think that's where you're going with this, right?
Yeah, I mean, but the question really is humanity. Are we going to be able to survive with everything that we're doing?
Well, you know, someone once said that the planet will be fine. Mother Earth will just shake us off like so many ants. And it's not going to happen like quite that dramatically or overnight or maybe not at all, especially if we wake up and smell the carbon and take a look at what's happening in front of our very eyes. But I do think we're going to see a slow diminishment in quality of life if we don't start protecting our life support system. You know, I talk about, rather than saying the environment, our environment. This is our life support system. And that's why
that's right. In
2013, almost midway through this year, after the, you know, year of epic, almost biblical weather events in 2012, it blows my mind that there are very few mainstream media outlets, you know, covering the kinds of things that we talk about on our show. And thank goodness for Progressive Radio Network and internet radio and media. But, you know, there is something to be said for, you know, being on a platform where there's already millions of listeners or viewers to really capture the mainstream and the ones that really most need to start connecting the green dots. So I think if we really don't educate and inform and inspire more mainstream, you know, American public citizens, I worry that we're really going to be harming not only, you know, the next generation and beyond, but just the quality of life for everybody going forward. Because if we have to fight harder for clean air, food, stable climate, you know, is less of a given, life is just going to get harder. And it's pretty darn comfortable right now. It's too bad that rather than, you know, working hard to preserve that, we're really kind of getting complacent, I would say, especially in this country.
Yeah, the key word there is comfortable, and unfortunately, I think that a lot won't happen until people are really uncomfortable.
Hmm.
And I think it's an odd thing, but I think we're in denial. At least the mainstream is in denial and doesn't want to acknowledge what's going on. And I think in some ways that was a survival trait with humans. mm-hmm. that we needed to not allow some things in so that we could get on and do what it is we need to do. But we have to really acknowledge what's going on, because now it's going to kill us if we don't
change
things.
It's a survival trait gone awry, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know what my passion is. My passion is food, and I believe we need to make a lot of changes, and technology has certainly advanced very quickly and at the expense of the environment, because we never really included the costs of limited resources and cleanup in our return on investments when we're considering whether we want to launch a product or not, and we don't include those things in the price of a product. And all of that needs to change, and in some ways it is changing. There's a lot of great new innovations coming out, but the thing that I always say is all of these things are going to take a lot of time and a lot of money. And if we have the time and money, those things will take place and things will improve. And that's where my passion about food comes in, because here is where we can make an absolute significant dent in cleaning up the environment today. But people have to know that they are responsible, and it's every individual who has to make the changes. Every individual has to select food choices that are gentler on the planet.
And then, once again, that's where, you know, the role of education comes in, and that's where mass media could really help us do our jobs
faster.
Because we don't have a lot of time. You know, if you just look at the rapidity of the onset of climate change and climate chaos, and what the scientists have been saying for a year or two is we have 2 to 5 years to turn things around. What does that mean? That means we're not going to be able to stop, you know, climate chaos, because what's already up in the atmosphere will be there for 50 to 100 years in terms of greenhouse gases. But if we don't slow, we can't stop, but slow what we're spewing into the atmosphere, we're going to lock in more destructive weather events and patterns. And so it all is connected to food, because we need it to live. And of course, as I'm sure you talk a lot about on your show, you know, a plant-based diet versus, you know, a meat or animal-based diet, it's a lot worse for the environment. And we're learning, you know, meat is also not good for humans, which I'm sure you and your listeners know. But I've been seeing recently advertisements for steakhouses on the television and radio, where I never did before. I bet it has something to do with just a couple of weeks ago that new research that came out that said steak is dangerous.
Yes, on carnitine. I was so excited when that came out.
I thought of you. I thought of you and my other vegan proponents and said, you know what, this is going to help a lot.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other conversation. I am really fascinated by bacteria, and I think that's where all of the great science is going to come from, all the studies on bacteria. This is a whole new field, and that's where the carnitine story came in, because we have different kinds of bacteria in our gut if we eat a lot of meat or if we don't, and that works with the carnitine in a negative way to increase arteriosclerosis and cardiovascular disease. But bacteria, it's just fascinating. But, and you know, the bacteria will survive whether humans do or not.
Yeah, I guess it's just us, and that's you period, S period, us, the United States. We're the ones that really need to take a look in the mirror and say, if we want to survive and thrive, again, let alone our children and grandchildren and 7 generations beyond, you know, what do we need to do to change the direction we're going?
Right. Now, I want to get personal. So I believe that the responsibility is up to every one of us. Every one of us makes a difference. And if you think that, you know, you making a change and that's the global you, you're wrong. Every one of us, it's that drop in the bucket concept where enough drops will fill the bucket. But Betsy, let's talk about you. Now, I know that you you recently did a juice fast.
Yes, I am a believer in plant-based diets and cleansing, not with maple syrup and cayenne pepper. I tried that one. That didn't last more than a day. But
that's right.
I've been on, I don't know if you're familiar with Diana Stobo, but she has a book of recipes, raw food mostly, and it's called Get Naked Fast. It's all about getting rid of the foods that weigh us down. And I just happened to know her because we lived in the same town. She moved to Southern California recently, but I did her 10-day cleanse twice. And your day starts with lemon water and then green juice, and then I have green tea. And oftentimes by noon, I haven't even, you know, had a bite of solid food. And what a difference it made. Of course, I lost 5 pounds each time, but I just felt so much better, because as anyone who eats the way you do and probably most of your listeners do, there's, I call it less stomach drama, you know, there's just less going on and it feels good. And you wake up with a flat tummy, you know, less activity, you know, all those things.
Yeah,
like,
so what happened after the fast? That's what I want to know about.
Yeah.
Did you change anything in your regular eating habits?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. I'd say less, you know, incorporating less of the bad, more of the good. There are days that I don't do that. You can ask my family. I still kind of have my cravings, which tend to be around cheese and cookies and not good. But I've been lucky because I've always had kind of a high metabolism. And even though I'm 50-something, I'm, you know, pretty much my normal weight. So I don't have to worry too much about that. But of course, as you get older, you have to worry about health and optimum health.
Right.
And so I'm all for a plant. I'm a believer. I'm a convert, I would say. And truly, I've always been about green everything, but now it's about green diets and green juice. That's really where it starts. And because we have the obesity epidemic that we do and diabetes and all the health problems that go along with it, heart disease, cancer, you know, and our climate and environmental crises, in one fell swoop, we could, you know, forget all the diets, just change the way we eat. And the meat industry and the dairy industry probably wouldn't be as happy, nor would the fossil fuel industry, you know, and chemical industries be as happy if we really changed the way we live to be much more sustainable for person and planet. But we need to go that way because we incremental, slow changes won't really do it. Really need to kind of make it more radical and more rapid, right?
We can solve so many problems and people could feel so much better. It's just so frustrating for me because the answers are here. They're not expensive. It just takes individual courage.
That's
now,
right.
Environmentalists, why are most environmentalists not getting the message about food?
And starting with our fearless leader, Al Gore, although he's starting to pay attention a little bit more.
He's moving in a better direction, but why is it, you know, I know it's hard for people to change their diets, but there's really a serious veil. People don't want to lift the veil. They don't want to acknowledge it. And, you know, I know they know. I know they know. They have to know. If you're studying the environment, you have to know about animal agriculture and how devastating it is, and yet they don't want to acknowledge it.
I agree. I think
what's
many
the
people...
reason?
I think many people think that they need animal protein when they're craving protein and they haven't quite made those substitutions, so they feel like it'll be too much of a personal sacrifice. Maybe they've convinced themselves that it would not be healthy for them, even though, again, the information and statistics are out there to show that this is a plant-based diet, much healthier all around. I think it's, you know, people have their vices, even environmentalists, and I think it's the last taboo. I mean, I gave up shopping for clothes because I moved several times in the last 6 years and realized I have enough clothes to, you know, open a store, and that was my one vice, two vices I had left, that and, you know, eating chicken and occasionally, you know, a taco with meat in it. I would never sit down and have a steak or a lamb chop, you know, for years, but gradually going in that direction. So I think even those of us, and yeah, it's somewhat hypocritical, but I said, well, I don't cook meat for my family. My daughter's a vegetarian. My husband doesn't eat meat or dairy. So if I have a little bit, if I'm at a restaurant every now and then because I'm craving it, okay. So I think the more we know, the more cognitive dissonance we should have in terms of, yeah, this really is not good for the planet. So even though I didn't feel too bad because I didn't eat much meat, I did feel like, you know, somewhat hypocritical. And I wish we could spread that gene, that clone that gene of cognitive dissonance and have more people feeling a little less comfortable, if you will. So I think it's just the way we've been raised. You know, we baby boomers were raised to think meat is good and healthy and, you know, not my family so much, but many were raised on steak and potatoes. And that does take some changing. I think the next generation will do better just because you would know the number of, you know, vegetarians and vegans growing. I don't know what rate, but it has to be going up.
Yeah, I think we're at 2% vegan and 4% vegetarian in the United States, something like that.
And that's still so small. And you know what that reflects, Karen? That when people say, oh, I see so many hybrid cars, or I've got a plug-in Prius now, starting to see more electric cars or plug-ins. I said, yeah, but get this. Hybrids, plug-ins, electric still only account, I believe, for about 3 to 4% of all cars sold in this country. So it's still way too small to really make a dent, really make a difference. How do we ramp that up? You know, I do believe there's a role for media. This is my, again, my soapbox, but I cannot believe that there is not one, you know, commercial mainstream outlet that dedicates at least 1 hour a week, if not daily, to discussing these issues, given how many problems we have and how many, you know, solutions are encompassed in changing our lifestyle and our consciousness. And as I say, you know, we need to have an educated citizenry to demand greener products, including food, you know, programs, policies, politicians, and presidents. And until we have that mass movement, and that's got to begin with education and information, not just, you know, what you should do because somebody said, because Karen or Betsy said, but what will make you and your family feel better and save money, because, you know, even if you buy organic produce, which is a little bit more than non-organic, granted, it's a lot less than buying meat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It, you know, I like to say it's all about food, but there's, we're in this capitalistic environment which has gone out of balance, or maybe that's just what happens when you're in capitalism for so long, where we are today with this extremely wide gap in the middle, with the middle class disappearing, the rich mm-hmm. getting richer, the poor getting poorer, and everybody getting poorer unless they're rich. And, you know, it would be great to have a media station like the Green Channel or something that broadcasts all day long about
don't
issues. I mean, why don't we have that? But we don't have it because there's no money behind it. And the people that want to have it can't afford it. You know, I would do it, but I you know, I can't afford it. And the investors, the advertising people that are advertising on television, you know, I don't have cable because I don't watch television very often. I just have the few handful of channels. The commercials are always cell phones and cars and pharmaceuticals. There's nothing else that's being advertised.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people that have advertising budgets.
That's right. Oh, don't forget about the oil and coal and natural gas companies. There are every other commercial on CNN, because I do watch CNN.
Right. Okay. Well, I don't have CNN, so that's maybe a whole other demographic and advertising rate thing that the oil and gas people like to go there.
Oh, yeah. Even if there's, I mean, it was the middle of Hurricane Sandy, right? And some mainstream media outlets, news outlets were actually saying, gee, could this be climate change? And it was like almost like they heated up more than ever the number of fossil fuel industry ads, as if they were getting nervous, you know, and saying, oh, no problem with a coal-centric future, no problem with fracking, you know, au contraire, because the other side will never have the kind of resources, if you will, to put, you know, the truth about GMOs or some of the health and environmental, you know, risks associated with fracking. That's the problem. And so people, Americans, who will be willingly lulled to sleep or happy to hear that they don't really have to worry or change their ways, I'm generalizing here, but, you know, for the most part, you know, they want to stay in their comfort zone, and, you know, the advertisers are keeping them there.
Okay, here's something completely different. Now, most of the time on mainstream media, we hear all of this sensational stuff about horrible things going on. We've certainly had a number of horrible things go on in the last week and in the last few months. But, you know, that's what we are shown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's selected for us to see. But there are many other things going on. There's many wonderful things where people are doing things or inventing things or creating things that are affecting as many people or more people than were affected in some of the recent horrible things that happened. We don't hear about them ever.
Mm-hmm. And even the horrible things that are happening with our environment, we don't hear about them. Isn't that interesting how there's, pardon the expression, almost a gangbang mentality as far as mainstream media covering the atrocities, the incredible tragedy of Newtown, which people should be up in arms, pardon the expression, about the need for gun control and what just happened with the bombings. That absolutely should get coverage, but it's day in, day out, and it goes on and on. If we don't use these, you know, experiences to do something to change our reality, shame on the media for covering it so much, but it doesn't lead to anything, or shame on Americans. But why don't we, you know, if we had the same coverage 24/7 of, you know, what's going on with the fact that we're almost at 400 parts per million of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, when the best thinkers say we shouldn't be above 350 parts per million of greenhouse gases, you know, why is that not reason to sort of wake up and smell the carbon to go, America, we've got a crisis here, and get that kind of same coverage. What will it take? You know, more epic weather, more towns flattened, more lives lost, more livelihood, you know, gone, more livestock gone.
Yeah. Do you know, is it a censorship issue with advertisers? Are there journalists with the mainstream outlets that do want to present information like we're talking about and they're just not allowed, or are they just not interested in doing that?
I think it's both, Karen, because I was in mainstream media. I worked for CBS Radio for 20
some odd
years. Yeah. I had to start my own feature called Trash Talk to get a designated minute on, you know, three times a week recycled, so nine times a week. I had to fight my news director who didn't think that that was news, reduce, reuse, recycle tips. But we had Martha Stewart on every day, you know, talking about something that I would argue may be popular but is not exactly newsworthy, and that's really where I kind of prevailed in, and he predicted I'd have 3 weeks' worth of material. So I had to create a show, if you will. It was just 60-second spots, you know, to get that kind of coverage on, and then had to fight, you know, convince Air America that an hour-long show on a weekly and then daily basis is what's needed. So it's the gatekeepers that I think are timid and kind of small-minded, but it's what comes first, right? They think that the public isn't interested in this, and the public doesn't see these concerns if they have them reflected on their mainstream media outlets. So some turn to the Internet, and that's happening more and more, and networks like Progressive Radio Network. But we're not going to capture enough of the masses unless it's there in the daily mix, you know, in the places where they still have millions and millions of viewers and listeners. And let's not forget, you know, 95% of all conventional talk radio, terrestrial broadcast-based radio, is conservative. And they won't let a green show on, because I've tried. I've gone to the top. So it's a combination. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of they're enjoying their party, Rush and friends and company. They don't want to let anyone spoil it. And it's also, I think, not enough people who run, you know, programming departments really understand that this is not a niche thing anymore, that this is really a mainstream concern, it being, you know, what's going on with our environment, which, of course, is many issues under that umbrella, and the food we eat. I don't think that programmers, the gatekeepers, really see the relevance and the urgency and the potential for solutions and the positive energy that's behind proponents of a different kind of lifestyle.
Well, they're probably not listening to the Progressive Radio Network like
you
they
think.
Should be. You know, it's just like so many, it always boggles my mind. You go to many doctors, and most of them really don't know much about healing. Sure, they've been to med school, and they're smart, but they've somewhat closed the door on learning more or learning about other things and what was in their curriculum. And I guess it's the same with all fields.
It really, that's a very good comparison, Karen, because it's they just don't have it in their toolkit. They just really haven't focused on it for whatever reason, and so therefore it's not relevant. It's not in their sphere of understanding, unfortunately, and I've been to many of them as far as just programmers and syndicators. Nobody seems to get it, and even Al Gore, when he had his, you know, current TV network, he didn't think we needed a climate change show unless he did it himself, but he was too busy. I mean, I'm kind of speaking out of school here, but hey, that blew my mind. Okay.
Yeah.
you know, where do we go from here, folks? And it's great that, you know, the Internet has democratized both, you know, media from a content provider and a consumer point of view. Again, it's got to be not just niche audiences, you know, just if progressive greens, God love them, are the only ones that listen to my show and your show, how will we grow the choir fast enough? That's the challenge. Not that it can't be done, but how do we do that? How do we, you know, bridge that big divide?
Right. So we just have like a couple of minutes left. Anything good happening in the environment these days?
Yes. Farmers markets are really thriving everywhere, and I think that's a really positive sign. I think that companies, corporations, manufacturers are starting to see that they don't need to overpackage things, that they can save their bottom line, their financial bottom line, by, you know, not just overdoing things so much. There's a little bit of consciousness beginning to penetrate into, you know, the mainstream product purveyors. I mean, I'd like to, let's see, what else? There's a new technology with cars. I mean, I'm getting 95 miles per gallon with my plug-in Prius Don't I feel pious because I only have to go to the gas station every 2 weeks instead of every week? But, you know, as long as they're more expensive, you know, and I just lease mine, I couldn't afford to buy one probably either. But I'm an early adopter. I'm on my fifth Prius, so I kind of get a new one every 2 years for a little bit extra a month, but not much. So most people, you know, don't see the benefit, even saving gas money and time. You know, it's the long-term benefit. We need to factor the environment. And so even though we have new technology, if it's not adopted and adapted, you know, quickly enough by the masses, it really won't be good news.
Yes, I know. I don't own a car because I live in New York City, but we rented a Hyundai Sonata for this trip, which is not a plug-in, but it recharges all your driving, I guess, and really great gas miles. It was just kind of fun to experience that, and I know that we can do a lot better.
I think people expect the performance to be compromised in these hybrid cars, and they're not. It's really not anything that you are losing. You're gaining time and saving money, but it does cost a little bit more up front. And, of course, it's chicken and egg. If more Americans bought these cars, they could mass produce them for less money, and then they'd be cheaper. So that's a chicken and egg conundrum that we're stuck in right now. But I have to think that we are on the verge of some kind of breakthrough because, you know, we just can't continue on this path without it becoming more painfully obvious that things need to change. Just if you just look at what they're forecasting with weather, you know?
We can't continue, especially with China and India and other countries coming on board, not learning from our mistakes and repeating our mistakes and magnifying our mistakes. So
Exactly.
These next few years are going to really be fun, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to talk about, and I thank you, Karen, for the great work you're doing.
Thank you, Betsy. Thank you for joining me. That's all about food. Stay green.
Okay. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. I'm Karen Harkless. You're listening to It's All About Food. We're going to take a little break, and I'll be back with Ellen Kander, the author of Feeding the Hungry Ghost. Everybody, we're back, and you're listening to It's All About Food on this April 23rd, 2013, the day after my birthday and the day after Earth Day. Woo! And I'm feeling pretty good, pretty tired after a really big Earth Day. And I'm happy to be here today talking about food, my favorite subject. And I want to know who you are. You know, I've been doing some events lately, traveling around, and people come up to me and tell me they listen to the show, and you have no idea how wonderful that is to actually see who you are. And if you have a chance, just drop me an email, tell me about what you like, what you don't like, and who you are. I really would like to know you. And that'll help me when I'm talking in an empty studio. Right now I'm actually in a mall, and I have to apologize if the sound is not the best, but like I said, I'm traveling, and this was really the only place I could broadcast today. So, thank you for putting up with that. Okay, now it's time for some fun. I want to bring on my guest, Ellen Kander. She's the author of a new book, Feeding the Hungry Ghost. She's an award-winning food writer and author of Feeding the Hungry Ghost, Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner. She's also Huffington Post Meatless Monday blogger and the syndicated columnist, Edgy Veggie. Is published in Bon Appetit, Eating Well, Vegetarian Times, Every Day with Rachel Ray, and Culinate, as well as in other online and print publications. She's an ardent advocate for sustainable, accessible food, serving on the Miami boards of Slow Food and Common Threads. Hi, Ellen.
Hey, Karen. Happy birthday, happy Earth Day. Keep the celebration going.
I'm totally there. You know, I'm reading your book. I'm about halfway through, and I'm saying, yes, it's all about the celebration. That's the best thing about what we do. It's fun, and it's a party, and the food is fabulous, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we have got to get this message out there.
I know.
And thank you for playing Team Vegan, by the way. That is fantastic.
For playing what?
Team Vegan.
Oh, yeah. Where are our shirts? I need a Team Vegan shirt.
That's right, Team Vegan. Yeah, I felt like you were on the same team as I was reading.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
but, you know, the book is for anyone who loves good food. And good food is good food. This just happens to be plant-based.
That's right. If you don't have to know, is it vegan? Well, the vegan people want to know, or people with allergies certainly want to know what's in their food. But other than that, it's just good food.
Right.
I wanted to ask you, I had something on the tip of my tongue, and I swallowed it, apparently. It's all about the celebration thing. I want to kind of riff on this a little bit, because certainly a lot of the times I talk about all the problems with animal agriculture. I was just talking about it on the half hour before, because we're talking about the environment, and
mm-hmm.
we know that there's a tremendous impact with our food choices and the environment. But the bottom line is, and I think this is what's really going to bring everybody over, is how the bright side, the side effects of eating healthy food. It's delicious. It's fun. You look fabulous. I turned 55 yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
And,
fantastic.
You know, and I'm not afraid to say that.
Because you look probably 10 years younger.
I don't know what I look, but I know I look good.
Right.
I feel good. And I feel good.
This it's the biggest win-win-win across the board. It's fantastic, affordable, delicious food that's great for your karma. It's great for the planet. It's delicious. I mean, why not? I always start with the point of pleasure, and that's what this is all about.
Now, but there are a lot of people find that they have challenges with this diet. I know I talk to people all the time. I see a lot of deer in headlights expressions from people wanting to do, not knowing what to do. And you have your own tips and suggestions and attitudes about transitioning or eating different foods.
Or eating a little more mindfully. I think that's a great place to start. And no one likes to be told what to do. So I, including me, so I came up with what I call gentle nudges. These are just ways to get you to connect a little more profoundly with what you eat and where it comes from without turning yourself inside out, even if it means trying an ancient grain like quinoa or millet instead of the usual white rice. It's got a lot more nutrition. It's got a lot more flavor. It cooks quicker. It's better for you. It's not hard to find.
Yeah, certainly not like it used to be.
Right.
And we've it's amazing the variety of food that we have available, at least in most markets in the United States. There are probably some areas where it's hard to find some things, but more and more big cities and in relatively highly populated suburbia areas, you can find any of these great foods.
I just heard from someone who picked up my book in the Cayman Islands. It's an island. And she's been able to find this stuff, and she said, holy, well, actually, she said something that was not probably something I should be saying on the air, but she said, this is really good.
Yeah, they're always surprised. I don't know what's so surprising about it. We've gone through 50, 60 years of some crazy kind of brainwashing indoctrination, getting us away from where we need to be.
Right.
And when we come back, it's just so surprising how wonderful it is. It's such a crazy world we live in. Okay, a few questions. Now, you live with your husband, who does not eat the way you do.
Yes, but, you know, if you're married to someone long enough, and if you're, a decent cook, you can kind of seduce him a little bit. He eats a lot more plant-based than he ever has, and he likes it.
Mm-hmm.
So do all our friends. The last time I had we had people over, I did this fantastic Moroccan dinner, with chickpeas and lemons and kalamatas and wonderful greens and tomatoes. And we had a great time and, maybe a little wine. And it wasn't until like 2 days later, my friend Mary called me and she said, that was vegan, wasn't it? I said, yeah, and it was also really good.
That's right. Yeah, I love having dinner parties. I love having people over and putting delicious food in their mouths.
Yeah, as I say.
Sometimes it's simple food, and sometimes it's outrageously complicated, involved, taking many days to prepare, but I love doing that.
Me too. And you're right. It doesn't have to be complicated. Beans, greens, they're been part of our diet since we walked on two legs. And it's so much better for us, the foods you can recognize, than all the weird stuff that's in the middle of the grocery store, the stuff they want to sell you.
Mm-hmm.
Kale has never had to say that it's gluten-free. It just is.
You know, I never thought of it. You just put an idea into my head, because I'm always telling people, you've got to read the labels, the fine print, put your reading glasses on. But when you're buying produce, there's no label. You don't have to read anything. The only thing that might be helpful is whether it's organic or not.
Right.
But it is what it is, and how simple is that?
Yeah, I think we do tend, as humans, to complicate things, but it doesn't need to be that way. The best food for us has been available for centuries and centuries, and it's still there. So go eat some.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that I read in your book. And you were talking about when you were about 7, I think, and you went shopping with your grandmother, and you saw all of these amazing different foods and jars and things, and you tasted halva for the first time.
Right. It was a Middle Eastern grocery store, which, by the way, is still in existence, which I still go to, the same one. So there's some sort of nice personal history there.
Yeah. I love ethnic stores because you get to discover all kinds of different products that aren't in the national chain stores. And sometimes there's some healthier foods, there are simpler foods, and just adds to the variety. But I went, trying to remember when it was, but I visited Israel a few times. I haven't been there I haven't been there since 1988, but I remember being in Jerusalem in the Old City, and certainly it's modernized a little bit, but not much. You know, they're living in all of these old stone structures that were built so long ago, and there are vendors of different foods there, and I will never forget the spice vendors.
Mm.
And there might be some places like this here in the United States, but everything was in these super large, big baskets, just huge, garbage bags, and the garbage cans only made of natural materials, filled with spices. And one would be, you know, a bright red and a bright yellow and all different beautiful earth tone colors. And I don't know why that thrilled me. But it did.
There is something kind of thrilling about it. You know, whole foods are naturally beautiful. Produce is beautiful. But yes, I know what you mean about the thrill of spices. There are markets in Morocco that are like that. And there's some very fancy spice shops in Paris that are like that. But I was thrilled to find one in Miami, which is the only place I've been in the United States that encourages you to smell the spices. You know, you can get a teensy little spoon and taste them. Like, yes, yes, yes. It has to be a full body experience. I mean, that's how we eat. It's a very intimate thing.
I'm glad you brought that up. I have been really into a olfactory smelling kind of experience these days. And I find that the higher quality products that I buy, the fragrances are part of the experience.
Absolutely.
Just this whole spice thing. You know, you've got some great recipes in your book, and spices are really important. People are afraid when they go to vegetarian foods that they're not going to have enough flavor. And I kind of encourage backing away from the salt when people are preparing food. And where is that flavor going to come from? And a lot of times it comes from herbs and spices. And I'm thinking back to when I was young, and we had
young. I just feel I need to say that.
When I was younger and I lived with my parents, we had the classic combination of spice rack. Mm-hmm. And some of those herbs and spices were years old.
Oh, and I know. One of the things, I do a lot of cooking demos, so I always bring like some fresh basil and some of the stuff that's in the jar that's just sort of brown, like you'd never know they were the same thing.
Yeah.
Go for real, go for fresh, go for green.
Now, you may have heard this, but I use a lot of herbs and spices in my recipes, too. And some people say, well, I don't have these herbs and spices. And, you know, when they're just venturing out trying a recipe, they don't want to have to invest in all of these different things.
You know, if you do invest, it's going to cost less than a couple cups of coffee at your major chains. And you'll have them on hand. So when you do come home after an exhausting day of work, you can dress up anything in just a few minutes. You know, what's worth investing in more than you? In your pleasure, in your health, in your happiness?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So many people go out every day and buy their coffee, buy their tea, and it's not cheap in many places. And that they might cringe on buying a little jar of some spice that'll last for a really long time and dress up their meals. It's a kind of an interesting perspective we have on life.
Yeah, we want it now, and we don't want to invest in it. But why not? I mean, what's more precious than we are?
Yeah, I tend to buy my spices and herbs in bulk now. I invested in these tins that can hold a pretty large quantity, not garbage can size, but maybe some of them hold 4 ounces to a pound.
Uh-huh.
And so I've just bought like everything, and I have this big collection, and I use them in great quantities. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, be lavish. Be generous with yourself. It really does wake up your mouth. It really can do anything. It can transform foods effortlessly without salt. I also love lemon juice for that because a squeeze really like makes a flavor pop. And no calories, no fat, no nothing, just flavor.
And the other thing I like to talk about is that people don't know where their kitchen is and they need to find it. And so I imagine that you do food demos and you encourage people to cook.
Yes, I do. And you don't have to have a designer kitchen to do it. You just sort of need...
Well, you know, the sad thing is the people that have a designer kitchens never use them.
This is true.
I've been in a few, and the all-clad pots have never been used.
I'm like a well-loved kitchen myself. Yeah. No, as you say, it's the frequently the least used room in the house, and it's worth discovering. You can get a lot of stuff out of a kitchen.
Now, you grew up with an interest in food and an interest in cooking. It was in your DNA, I guess.
Yes, it was. The vegan thing, I had to sort of forge my own path. But, my family always cooked, and we gathered on weekends. It's just sort of what we always did. It was a great way to bring people together. It still is.
It still is. Can we underline that? Because we've gotten so far away from that in our culture today.
It is. I don't quite get it. I know that for most people, most of my friends, cooking and eating is a lonely kind of drudging act. And I'm thinking, you know, where's the fun in that?
Mm-hmm.
And I also have a friend who texts me all the time. And after like the fourth or fifth one in an afternoon, I'll say, you know, you live pretty close. Why don't you come by on your way home and we'll have dinner? It's much easier.
Yeah, I'm all about that, encouraging people to get together and break the proverbial bread.
Yeah, you know, it's sacred, and it's a great way to communicate, to commune. Put the joy back in your dinner.
Now, who is the hungry ghost?
Oh, we all are. Originally, it was a Buddhist concept about people who were so hungry and clutchy and needy and crazy that they're that way even after they die, and then they come back and haunt you. So if you want to appease the hungry ghost, you do it with care, with prayer, and with food offering. Well, we need that now. I mean, we all do. We're hungry for so much. For meaning, for connection, for love, for a greener planet that we don't necessarily know how to get, for more fun. And if we just show a little more care towards ourselves and the foods we choose, we can get all that back. We can feed our hungry ghosts.
And do you find that people, if you're invited to an event or people that might want to have dinner with you, are they at all intimidated?
Because I really try
to eat a certain way and you cook well.
I really try to bring it down. I want everyone to be welcome at my table. I'm the vegan who invites everyone to the table. And, you know, if someone is nervous about having me over, I'll say, look, let's make it a potluck. I'll bring something. Let's not stress. Let's put the pleasure back in this.
I agree with you, and I like to think that I try and be that way, but I know that I scare some people. And if I've ever scared anyone, I'm sorry. It's not my intention at all. I want everybody to be happy.
Right. No, being vegan, the point is compassion. And that's even for our fellow human animals, which is sometimes a struggle for me.
But people, some people just don't know how to make something vegan, and they don't even realize that so many of the foods that they eat are already vegan.
Exactly. But, you know, if you think, you know, I'm kind of nervous about this whole plant-based business, go to your farmer's market or go to your store or go to someone you know who eats that way and say, show me. Let's make dinner together.
Now, what about cravings? I think you mentioned cravings in there somewhere.
Oh, we all have them.
Yeah, I mean, I've been hearing a lot of different things about cravings these days, and a number of people have different spins on cravings.
Do
you have cravings?
I have cravings for greens and oatmeal.
You crave oatmeal.
I think so much of what most people eat these days is processed, and that just creates more cravings. It turns us into junkies. It doesn't make us too terribly smart, but it makes us want to eat more processed food. If I could suggest one thing, if you made one little tweak, more produce, less processed food. Mm-hmm. Once you start getting used to that, you'll find a lot of the cravings for salt, for sugar, for crazy things that you're not even sure what they are, will go away.
It pisses me off that a lot of food is designed for us to crave. It's chemically designed, and they have studied the psychology and our physiology and have put into certain processed foods this desire factor so that we are never sated and we want more of it. And that pisses me off. And I wish everybody was pissed off. I don't want to touch those foods that have been designed to program me.
Exactly. They only want you to keep buying more of them. They're not doing it for our benefit.
Pisses me off. We should get angry.
We already are.
No, we shouldn't get angry.
We should just cook better. We should eat better.
Happy. So I'm a crazy vegan. I've been vegan for 25 years and vegetarian for a whole lot more, and I like to eat healthy food. And I find, especially when I'm traveling, when I'm not in entire control of what I'm eating, and I'll eat more in a restaurant, and so I get more salt and I get more oil in my food, and to me that's eating badly. The cravings that I get are for salads and steamed greens.
Oh, yeah. I'm always desperate to get more greens into people.
There's nothing that kale can't do.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you hope happens with this book, Feeding the Hungry Ghost?
I hope... I hope feeding the hungry ghost leaves you feeling nourished in every single way.
Okay. Well, I wish you a lot of luck with this book. It's great. It's a lot of fun to read. Feeding the Hungry Ghost, Life, Faith, and What to Eat for Dinner. And I'm going to be in South Florida next week, Ellen, and I hope I have a chance to meet you face to face.
That would be so much fun. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, thanks for joining me on It's All About Food. I'm Karen Herklass. And have a very, very, very delicious week. And send me an email at info@realmeals.org.
I want to know who you are.
Bye.